The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
This episode of the Steve Austin Show is sponsored in part by DDP Yoga. Hey man, working all those matches I did over the years, it ain't no surprise my body's taking its share of ass whoopings, bumps, and bruises. Well, my buddy Diamond Dallas Page knows all about the wear and tear the ring takes on your body because he did the same exact job I did and ended up in the exact same place as I did as well. The WWE Hall of Fame. And check it out. His DDP Yoga Fitness System was specifically designed to burn fat, reduce pain, and heal from all these injuries we suffered. Dallas is so positive that you will absolutely love the DDPY program and using the DDPY app that he's doing something he ain't never done before. He's going to give you 7 days free to try it out. That's a week to try the program. Explore the app and own your life, and it's completely free. DDP Yoga can work for all ages, weights, and fitness levels. It's a kick-ass cardio workout that will dramatically increase your flexibility and strengthen your core like never before, all with minimal joint impact. Just for listeners of the Steve Austin Show, you can save 20% off an annual membership for the DDP Yoga Now app of any DVD pack. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Austin to get started. And hey, check this out. Dallas will be at the Motor City Comic Con in Novi, Michigan. He'll be appearing all 3 days, Friday through Sunday, May 18th, 19th, and 20th. Come on down, get an autograph, take a picture, meet and hang out with Dallas at the Motor City Comic Con. You can get details and ticket info at MotorCityComicCon.com.
The following program is a Podcast1.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I'm coming to you from Broken Skull Ranch 2.0 outside of Reno, Nevada. I'm sitting here in my podcast studio with this microphone in my hand, and Callie, my black lab, is sleeping her ass off right beside me. She's supposed to be watching security for me, but she's sleeping, and I'm watching her six instead of her watching mine. But nonetheless, I tell you what, man, it's been raining cats and dogs all morning out here. It's been awesome. Thunder and lightning, rain coming down this winter. I saw some snowstorms, but this is kind of my official heavy-ass rain. I'm digging it. We need the rain. Everything is greener than hell out here. It's absolutely beautiful. I tell you what, man, yesterday, I told you guys when I come out here, I was going to try to ride my Kawasaki Mule, my Brute 4 750, and my KLX 450 dirt bike every single day. I was going to ride one of those vehicles. Just yesterday, I went out. Before I went out, my wife told me, she said, man, there's a 30% chance of rain. And you're heading over to those mountains over there, aren't you? I said, yep. And it was kind of gray and dark over those mountains. I said, that's where I'm headed. I said, 30%? Ain't no way I'm going to get hit by 30%. I got this. Had my tennis shoes on, and I was fixing to head out the door. And I said, dude, you know what? You might want to put your boots on. These tennis shoes are a little bit on the flimsy side. And so I went in there, put on my high-tech Magnums, them same damn boots that I wore on WWE, 25th anniversary of Raw. Same boots that I wore all them years, stomping mud holes, walking dry in the middle of that squared circle. Put those things back on. Brought back a lot of memories. Boy, I started stunning everything in sight. I went out to my truck, got my ramps down, tied my ramps to the back of the tailgate, loaded up my Brute 4 750, got ready to go, threw my helmet, my goggles, all my stuff in there. And I hauled ass over this little area and unloaded. And no sooner than I had backed my four-wheeler down those ramps, started it up, left it, was running, warming it up, put all my gear on, my gloves, my helmet, my goggles, put my iPhone in my little container there on my four-wheeler so it keeps it dry, and that's where I hold all my stuff. And I hauled ass out of there. And I swear to God, I hadn't gone 200 yards from my pickup truck when here comes that 30% chance of rain. It was 30% and all over my ass. I zipped it around, did a U-turn, hauled ass back to my pickup truck, got my keys out of that cubby hole, unlocked it, got back in my truck, and sat there with my thumb up my ass for about 25 minutes while I waited for that 30% to get out of there. Finally, it slowed down, and man, I had the ride of a lifetime. I've been riding this one particular area quite often, and I know it like the back of my hand now. And man, I'd covered about 15 miles, and I circled back around into a little section of some stuff that I hadn't been on before. Now, normally, when I'm out there, I'll kind of make a slow lap, kind of scout everything, get my bearings, see what's what, see what I'm getting into, because when you're riding uncharted territory, you go ripping through there, you don't know what you're getting into, man. You can fall in some big-ass ravines, potholes, all kinds of shit can happen, bad shit. So, sure enough, man, I was riding my ass off, riding like the wind, thumb on the throttle. That V-twin, that 750cc motor will just flat-out haul ass and straighten your arms. I'll come off a left-hand turn, just gassed it, and boy, all of a sudden, there's trouble. 15 yards in front of me, a big gully right in the road. There's a high side. That high side is not a good option. It's going to flip me over. Low side is really not a low side because nothing but sagebrush and a big boulder. Only thing I can do, going the speed that I'm going, is just thumb her down and just keep going and hope for the best. If I grab both brakes, that's going to slow me down. I'm going to skid right in that gully, and I'm going to go end over end. So a lot of good things are going to happen. One of them for sure. Most of them ain't going to be that good as far as results. Luckily, I had on my boots. I had on my helmet, my goggles, my gloves. I had on a camouflage jacket with a lot of padding in it because it was kind of cold. And I tell you what, man, that electronic power steering on that thing saved my ass. I hit that damn gully, jumped up in the air. I swear to God, I thought it was like Evel Knievel at Caesar's Palace way back in the day. And I was just way up in the air, and I wasn't jumping a bunch of school buses, but my ass was up in the air about 3 foot. And I knew when I come down, it was going to be nothing pretty, and I was going to be scattered all over that damn mountain, just like Evel got scattered all over that parking lot. And holy smokes, luckily that badass suspension on that four-wheeler, I come down, bottom them shocks out, and just come screeching to a halt, because at that time I was ready to just kind of stop and see what was going to happen and take inventory, because I really thought I was going to bite it. I thought I was just going to eat it and just be smashed up on the side of that mountain. I looked back and I said, holy smokes, dude, you talking about dodging a bullet. So next time, here's my word of advice, moral of the story. If you're riding your buggy, whatever kind of buggy you got, whatever brand it is, four-wheeler, buggy, or motorcycle, if you're out there riding around, make a slow scouting lap to kind of get your bearings and see what's up. Well, I tell you what, man, the terrain out here is a lot different than South Texas. South Texas is mainly flat, some rolling terrain. The roads, you know, nice senderos, dirt, a little bit of gravel. The brush will kick your ass. It's nothing but thorns and everything that'll cut you, stick you, and hurt you. Out here, everything is rocky. There's hard pack, soft pack, or loose pack. Boulders, mountains, uphill, ascents, downhill descents, lots of technical stuff. Some stuff that's just real tricky, but just it's really rugged terrain. So, mister, you fall off your rig out here, no matter what you're driving, this ground, this earth is just going to eat your ass up. And as I was sailing through the air, everything always happens in slow motion. I was like, man, this is a shitty situation to be in because there ain't no way I'm coming down from this and coming down on all four wheels. And by the grace of who or whatever, I come down safely, and I will forever now scout where I'm going. And luckily, I had on all my protective gear, had something gone awry. I had my helmet on, my shoulder pads, all that stuff, boots. And the only thing about it was I had on a pair of shorts. So I should have my knee pads on, and I am online on Amazon right now looking for some motocross pants. They got some built-in padding on the hips and stuff like that. So I'm going to get a little bit more protection because when you ride, I like to just cruise around. And a couple of weeks ago when I was riding with my brother-in-law, Mitch, a little bit different story because he knew that territory like the back of his hand, and I was following him so I could ride and just haul ass. When you're out there by yourself, man, you got to do your due diligence and you got to wear protective gear. I was covered up, but if I would have crashed that four-wheeler, I'd have been a heap out there. I was only about 3 miles from my truck, but it would have been a real shitty situation. So nonetheless, I come out of that lucky as hell and didn't end up like Evel Knievel. But nonetheless, my guest today is the Big Show, the dude who tried to FaceTime me while I was driving around the mean streets of Los Angeles, California, to tell me about the new Judas Priest album. I downloaded it. I ain't listened to it yet, but I'm going to download it. I told you guys I'm going to talk to Big Show, and this podcast is about an hour of me just shooting the breeze with him. And then I asked you guys to send me questions to questions@steveaustinshow.com. So on Tuesday, that's when I'm going to play the questions that I asked Big Show that you guys sent in, and he answers your questions. So it's always fun to talk to Paul. He's a good dude, just signed a new deal. I'm real proud of him, real happy for him. He's had what an outstanding run. He'll go in the Hall of Fame whenever they want him to, and he deserves it. What a run he's had. He's been around forever and made a huge impact, no pun intended. But anyway, before we get to the Big Show, I got to tell you guys, did you know that 65% of men start to lose their hair by the time they're 35? It happens so fast, you barely have time to notice. Well, listen up. It's 2018 and things are changing. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. And Hims is here to help you figure it all out. Hims is a wellness brand for the modern man. A one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness. Making men's personal care trusted, easy, and affordable. Hims offers FDA-approved medical-grade products, personalized recommendations, plus convenient, confidential online consultations with a licensed doctor. There are no pharmacy lines, no waiting room. The products are shipped directly to your door. And Hims passes big savings along to you, offering prescription and generic for just a fraction of the price. Sound treatment and prevention backed by medicine and science. Look better, feel better, do better with Hims. For listeners of the Steve Austin Show, get a trial month of everything you need to keep your hair for just $5 while supplies last. Now, this would cost you hundreds of dollars if you went to a doctor's office or a pharmacy, so what are you waiting for? Save some damn money and save your damn hair. Just go to forhims.com/unleash for all the details. That's forhims.com/unleash and stomp a mud hole into hair loss and walk it dry. One more time. That's forhims.com/unleash to get yourself a trial month for just $5.
There's never a dull week in the world of professional wrestling, so to keep up on all of it, be sure to subscribe to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast here at Podcast One. I produce two new shows each week. Every Thursday on our flagship show, I'm joined by a co-host from the wrestling journalism field to talk about the hot topics in WWE and elsewhere. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff, talking about his days working for WWE, and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or on the Podcast One app or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
I'm hiding in a place in my house because my bird's squawking his ass off. So. Son of a bitch knew I was doing something. I'd love to get him stuffed. I don't think anybody would know if I got him stuffed. Like, oh, what a pretty bird. I'm like, yeah, he's real quiet. That son of a bitch is nonstop, and it lived to be over 120 years old. This life ain't fair.
Well, I'm glad you started on that rant. I'm Rolling Sound. I'm at Broken Skull Ranch 2.0, about 50 miles outside of Reno, Nevada. And I got my door open. I'm over here in like my podcast studio. I'm looking at my pond. There's geese everywhere. Herd of cows just walked by. My dogs are loving it out there. And I hear you having troubles with the damn bird. What kind of bird do you guys got?
I got a green Amazon. You know, I made the mistake years ago of buying this damn thing. Every time I went into PetSmart, I saw this ugly bird, and like his price kept getting marked down, which should have been my first clue not to buy him. He had like 10 markdowns, and I was like, oh, poor guy. You know, he's just the ugliest bird you've ever seen. He's, even for an Amazon parrot that are supposed to be so beautiful and majestic, he's ugly. He can't help it. I mean, he is, like other birds will say he is ugly. You know, and I felt bad and bought him, and ever since then, he's just been an absolute holy terror from inadvertently dropping the F-bomb and the middle of the company being over to just making the microwave noises, the house alarm, the car alarm, just whatever he can do, you know. And he'll live to be over 100 years old. It's like, you know, I walk by him and say fried chicken, and I know he knows what I'm talking about. So.
What, does he ever impersonate your iPhone going off and you go to answer it?
No, he doesn't do the iPhone, but he'll call the dog's name every now and then. And, you know, we used to have a boxer, God bless her. Her name was Ella. And she passed away a couple of years ago. She was 13, but he would call the dog over all the time. And, Ella, Ella. And the dog would come over the cage like, what's he going to do? Give you a cookie or something, you idiot? Like, it's a doggone bird. Like, what are you doing? Just because you hear your name doesn't mean you have to walk over there.
The bird's, you know, over a rib and a dog.
Yeah, the bird will rib the dog. Yeah, he's real careful. I've got a pit lab now. He's the only one I got left. I had a mastiff, a German shepherd, a boxer, and him. For a long time, I had three females and him. They all got old. They had good lives. I mean, they all lived 13, 14, 15. So those are big dogs, which is pretty rare for a big dog to live that long. But, yeah, my pit, when he was younger, his lab, he knows I don't like him. So right away, my pit lab doesn't like him. So every now and then that bird gets loud and my pit will hit that cage at 90 pounds wide open and slam that cage and he'll knock the bird off his post. And the bird will land on the bottom of the cage and fluff up, just like you see two kids in the schoolyard bow up.
Yeah.
The bird will bow up, and knowing there's a cage between him and 90 pounds of teeth, will still bow up at the dog like he's going to whip the dog's tail. Like, the bird has, he's a bird brain. What are you going to do, right?
What do you do when you have a bird like that? I mean, what do you do to exercise the little bastard? I mean, or do they like exercise? Do they want it? Is his wings clipped so he can't fly away? What's the story? I never had a bird.
Well, it's funny. I've had birds before, and they're all different. Like, I've had conures, and I've had macaws and stuff like that. And I had a couple of really big macaws for a while. And as a new bird owner, I made a huge mistake. I put both the macaws together in this huge cage. And birds tend to bond with someone, especially another bird in the same cage with them. And, like, I hand-fed the macaws since they were little babies. But they bonded with each other. And macaws have really big beaks. I mean, they can doggone take your finger off if they wanted to, even one of mine. So I gave those birds to the Busch Gardens, and they got bigger. I was just a new bird owner and didn't know. I learned more about birds after having them. Every bird's different. Like, I mean, I would love to be able to let Max out and let him fly around, but I got five cats and a pit lab that I don't think it'd be his best interest to let him fly around the house and hang out. But, you know, he's got plenty of toys and stuff inside of his cage. He's got a huge cage for his size. So he has plenty of things to do. He's got mirrors and bells. And, you know, every now and then he'll start ringing that bell like he's ringing the dinner bell. And it's usually right in the middle of me doing something. The bell will go off. Like, he knows when I'm doing something. Like, right now, he knows I'm on the phone with you. I'm the opposite of the house. And he's been squawking for 5 minutes straight because he knows I'm doing something. He's just a constant ripper. You know, he can't help it. Like, the birds are like, they say birds have the mental equivalent to like a 3 or 4 year old child. They're very emotional. You can't, if you yell at them, they react poorly. They're smart. They're intelligent. They're manipulative. Just like a small child, you know, they'll have temper tantrums like a small child too. I mean, you know, so you have to kind of learn your bird's behavior. And, you know, some days he's an absolute angel. I can pull him out of the cage and, you know, and him and I will hang out when I get the room cordoned off so I don't have any loose predators in the room. You know, and he has fun. And some days he doesn't want to come out of the cage.
How old is
this bird?
Kind
of tough for him. He's got to be 15, 16 years old now. He'll live to be over 100.
Hey, man, so you guys got a plan in your will for him to go somewhere? You know, he's going to outlive you guys.
He ain't outliving me. When he dies, when I die, I'm having him stuffed. He's going with me. That's in the will. So there's no way that little prick's going to outlive me longer than 5 minutes. So, no, I don't know. I mean, hopefully it's one of those kind of things that, you know, I'll be able to pass it down to my daughter or something like that, you know.
Hey, what do you guys do with all those animals when Bess comes to, like, a WrestleMania or whatever type of event, or if you guys go on vacation? I know you guys probably don't do too many vacations.
Vacation?
I know. That's why I covered that up. If you ever leave, takes care of all those animals?
We have some friends who do it. I mean, we have, we've had Karen for years who, we call her Yankee Karen. She's one of Bess's old friends from Toronto. And Yankee lives down here in Florida now. She takes care of a lot of elderly people at home. Like, here in Florida. So she's a nurse and she's known all the animals since they were little bitty. My dog likes it when Karen comes around because he puts on weight when she's around because I think all she does is feed and treats all damn day. I mean, we have people that we can depend on. I mean, that's a tough thing when you have animals, you know, if you're not traveling and do anything, it makes it difficult. You know as well as I do, when you're on the road as much as you and I were, the last thing we want to do is go anywhere. Vacation is my couch with no one around. That's an ideal vacation. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to go out to dinner. To me, I don't have to pay valet. I don't have to deal with anybody. I can walk 15 feet from the table to the couch and it's a good night. So, but yeah, I definitely need somebody to help you with that many animals.
Man, I tell you what, when someone has to watch our dogs, I mean, my wife, Kristen, I mean, she'll interview these people. I mean, there's only like a select few, and then, you know, they basically right. go everywhere with us. But I mean, man, you got to pass it. It'd be easier to get, I don't know, a job with the FBI than to be able to watch our dogs. So it's like my wife is just crazy about this. And I don't want some psychopath in my house going through all my shit. But like right now, yeah. we're in Nevada. And we don't have a doggy door out here, so we got a big ass backyard. It's fenced in, but my wife just for some reason, like Callie, my black lab, she's a year and 2 months old. She's like a psycho, man. She is my best buddy. She's always up by my hip. Mula, she can stay in the house all day. She's a little bit of a house dog, but anyway, yesterday because we're out here in Nevada, man, I got a Kawasaki mule, I got a four wheeler, I got a dirt bike, so I figured, okay, yesterday I'm gonna take the mule out, and you can fit six people in this thing. So Callie sleeps beside me in the front seat and Mula stays in the back seat. And so that's where they ride. And so I was thinking, okay, I'm going to take the mule. So I'm going to drive slow because I have the dogs with me. So I'm riding around on this flat stuff. And a lot of this terrain out here in Nevada is very, very rocky. And I'm taking it easy. I'm just kind of on a joy ride. But, you know, the guy part of me sees this real steep incline and says, you know what, it'd be cool to climb that. So that's what I'm going to do. And I veer off the smooth path, and I'm starting to drive up the side of this mountain. Well, I get about halfway up there. Well, it's about a third of the way up there, and all of a sudden, man, it's pretty damn vertical. And then, you know, if you're not picking a good line, you know, when you're going up, you know, in a buggy or four-wheeler or anything like that, you want to point north and south. You start getting a little bit of east-west, you're going to roll that damn thing. And exactly. So I kind of started getting between a rock and a hard place. I'm sitting there, and I just mash on the brakes. I put on the parking lever. I shut it down. I'm just kind of chilling out there, and I'm just sitting, okay, now what are you going to do, dude? It's not like you can just go up and turn this thing around because you're on a pretty steep plane. And, you know, to the top was about another 300 yards. And here's the deal. The machine has the capability to get up the mountain, but it's because Callie's there in the front seat with me and then Mula's in the back. I'm thinking coming down, this thing's going to be a real bitch because the dog's going to be bouncing everywhere. And it's one thing, dude, if I roll that buggy, if I did, you know, that's on me and I can handle that or jump out or do whatever because shit happens sometimes. But with those dogs in there, if I was to roll that thing, boy, my wife is going to skin my ass. So
yeah, you don't go home, buddy. You get your passport smuggled to you, and you leave the country. You wind up in Mexico somewhere with Toby Keith having cervezas on the beach for the rest of your life. Yeah.
Dude, I started okay, you know, here's the deal. I said, let me see if I can just ease backwards down this sumbitch. And I started going backwards. I'm riding a brake. You know, you're trying to pick the same line that you took up, but while you've got your head cranked around to the right or looking to the left with the stack of dimes I got, which is basically all fused up, I can't turn around. So I said, F it. I said, I'm going to the top. There's a place about halfway up on this damn mountainside that I said, I think I can attempt a turnaround there. And I just said, you know, I locked it in four wheel low, hit the gas pedal and off we went. And I was able to, it took me about 5 minutes to spin that thing around because, dude, you know how it is. You'll roll that bitch. So anyway, I come back down.
Quick. It happens real quick. Yep.
Callie's riding beside me and I've got, you know, Mula always stands in the back seat. So I'm turning around. And I'm using my right arm to give her the Heisman stiff arm to keep her stuck to the back seat so she doesn't come tumbling down into the floorboard. So anyway, it was today I'm going back with a vengeance. I'm taking my four-wheeler and I'm letting Kristen babysit the dog so I can go out there and raise hell.
That's funny. I thought you were going to say you got halfway up the hill and the dogs bailed on you.
Oh, no, them dogs ain't belling out of nothing. But, you know, because, like, Callie's still getting used to it. Mula's been riding forever. She's taking Hershey's back spot back there in the back. And, you know, going back to what you were saying.
She's an old pro. She gets it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Who's going to go all over the place. We'll be safe. But
Yeah, I get it. Anyway, not everybody wants to hear about my precarious tales of riding the back roads and mountainsides of Nevada.
No. After the life that you and I lived, little stuff like that is, even though we started it way back when, before we ever did anything and toured the world, that's what we did for fun. We rode mountain bikes. We did four-wheeling. We went mudding. I mean, you know, that's stuff that we did. And now, to be at a point in your life where you can do that, it gives you a sense of humility. It's not the extravagant things in life that make life. It's the little things. It's the little fun things. Like, you're getting out today, you're going to go out after this podcast talking to this old grumpy giant, and you're going to climb that mountain. So it's a good thing.
God dang, I get so much enjoyment out of being out here. And, you know, out here, you know, basically, you know, no one bothers you. No one bothered me in L.A. because I used to see him in L.A. But, man, I get out here, and it's just kind of like heaven.
How do you deal with the summers out there, though? Isn't it like, you know, 120 degrees or some stuff?
No, man. I'm in northern Nevada. So, you know, down here in Vegas, I'm sure it's like that. Yeah. A lot of people think I'm close to Vegas. No, I'm nowhere near Vegas. Man, I'm up here. I'm at the base of the Sierra Nevada Mountains. I've got incredible water rights.
Wow.
I've got a pond in my backyard. I'm on an artesian well. So, I mean, I have premier water where I'm at. And where I'm at, like, we're at the base of the Sierras. So, you know, a lot of Nevada's brown. I mean, it's mountainous country. It's basically a high desert. But where we're at, it's kind of like cattle grazing properties, horse properties, because the runoff from those mountains is so great. Hey, alfalfa fields just everywhere. So, like, our place is just a big green spot, and it's kind of like, you know, just a little piece of heaven. But you don't need a big place, because, you know, 90% of Nevada is BLM, so I can go ride everywhere. And as a matter of fact, before I started Skyping with you, I was on my wife was on Amazon ordering me a GPS device, because, man, I don't know how you were when you had your boat out there a while back. Like, out here, I'm used to navigating South Texas, but out here, when you get up on some of these ridges, and I'll kind of keep one of the peaks as far as my landmark, and I'll always know where the sun is. But you start going over these different passes and over these different hills, and all of a sudden everything changes. And it's like, you know, before you know it, you know, you got a quarter tank of gas left. You spent three quarters of a tank getting there. And it's like, dude, I'm a little bit turned around. So the last thing I need is for my bald-headed goateed ass with bad knees to have to run out of gas, walk back down my pickup in my trailer, and then walk back with a gas can to fill that sumbitch up if I can find it.
No, I think when I had the boat, because I would go out 25, 26 miles into the Gulf when I lived in Tampa, and I would just drop anchor. It'd be 28, 30 feet of water, and it was nice out there. And it was quiet. You know, that's the thing you look for. You want, you know, you love your fans. You love the attention you get. It's what we do. We're all attention hogs, because otherwise we wouldn't do what we do. But that sense of peace to recharge, you need that isolation, I think. I know I do. For me, it was, it's a lot easier because it's on the water. You know, I had my course and my heading. So I still had GPS and navigation, all that stuff on the boat, but I would just set my degrees. And I knew that, you know, if I was going out, you know, whatever it is, if I was going out 360, I would come back 180. So, you know, I would just do my degrees, and I would take the boat out by myself, which is real damn stupid, because I would go way out there by myself, drop anchor and go swimming. And I was out there one time, and I'm just thinking, you know, this is what happens to dumb, rich white people that go swim in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico by themselves. That's all I need to do is run across some rogue shark that thinks I'm a lost walrus. This is back when I was 500 pounds, get my ass nailed and nobody ever knows what happens to me. You know, I'm going to quit doing dumb stuff like this. So it was funny. I just, I ended up selling the boat after that. I got rid of it. I got rid of it because I got tired of being the one that paid for the gas, being the one that cleaned it, being the one that drove it. I couldn't drink on the boat. I couldn't have a good time no matter who I had on it, because I had to get everybody out and everybody back. So it was like I was a glorified chauffeur. Now I'd rather rent a boat, let somebody else drive it, enjoy it, ruin the lavatories like everybody did my boat, and see you bye. You know, man, happiest day in a boater's life is the day he buys it and the day he sells it.
Man, me and Kristen did a bunch of research for, man, almost 2 years, because, man, we're living in Marina Del Rey. When you take off out of LAX, I know, but if you take off out of LAX And all of a sudden, that plane starts turning around. If you look to the right, you can see the marina. Hell, my house is with a stone's throw of that place. But the thing about it is, you get out in that marina, and this is me on my jet ski, and everything's fine and dandy. It's smooth. But all of a sudden, you get outside those jetties. Dude, you're in the Pacific Ocean. And back when we used to film Redneck Island on Lake Hartwell over there, you know, kind of in South Carolina, Georgia, South Carolina, Lake Hartwell, basically, Georgia. So anything, you know, that lake is 43,000 acres. That's a big-ass lake. One time on my jet ski, I got a little bit turned around as far as my sense of direction because those coves and those fingers that where I was staying back in, from a topo map, they look, you know, very definitive. But when you're 3 feet off the water, it's kind of hard to – if you lose your bearings – You're screwed.
Yeah.
But the saving grace is
if you're riding along enjoying, you'll lose your point of reference from the shore where you are or whatever, and then you're all turned around. Yeah.
Yeah, the thing about riding on a lake is you can pull over to somebody's pier, you can pull over to shore, but if you're in the Pacific Ocean, dude, you can't come on the beach because you're not allowed on the beach. And then, dude, you're like a cork bobbing up and down on the ocean. So, you know, now that I have this place in Nevada, there's several lakes. Well, you know, I'm just a few miles from Lake Tahoe.
Okay.
There's another smaller lake nearby. So, man, I got all kinds of, you know, now that I have, you know, lake access, I'm going to bring my jet skis already here. But, dude, I'll stop riding in the Pacific Ocean because – again, I was doing the solo thing. You know, what am I going to do? Hire some guy that knows his way around the waters to ride, you know, behind me and hang on my waist? I don't think it's going to happen. Yeah. And I don't know anybody else that's got a jet ski that I like.
You can get David Hasselhoff to follow you around with one of those red buoys around his chest. It's funny, when I moved to Miami, the biggest difference was, like in Tampa, you get out in the Gulf, you don't really have a lot of currents out in the Gulf. The Gulf is pretty much, I don't want to knock it, but from my experience around Tampa, Clearwater, idiot water. You got to watch out for your sandbars, low tide, stuff like that. But if you get down to Miami and you start getting some of those currents and the reefs and stuff like that, and it'll change. It's more work than it's worth. It really is. Like for me, it just got to be just too much grief. And the only boat slip I could get in Miami when I was in Miami, I had a 47 foot boat. I had a 40 foot boat, I think, with a 7 foot swim deck. So I had 47 feet of boat from bow to stern, basically, and 12 and a half, 13 foot beam. So it was pretty wide, but I'm in a 50 foot boat slip. You know what I mean? So parking that sumbitch was really tense. Like, you know, you didn't come out and talk to me about, you know, like football teams or the weather or, you know, wrestling angles while I was trying to park it. Cause, you know, I mean, my butt was chewing a hole in the driver's seat of that boat trying to park that thing. Cause, you know, there's other boats around you. There's boats across from you, you know, and then if you're battling the wind, even though it's a motorboat, you know, because the marina is so dead calm back where it was, the wind will drift you, stuff like that, you know, and it's like, you know, this is just, this has not become fun anymore. This has become too stressful. I don't need this. I just want to jump on and enjoy. But up in Nevada, I went years ago out to in Vegas. I went out to the lake out there in Vegas. What's that lake outside of Vegas?
Probably Lake Mead.
Out there. Lake Mead, yeah. And I rented a houseboat, one of those pontoon boats.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, you know what? It wasn't very fast, but, man, you talk about fun. Jump off of it, swim. You know what I mean? You know, I had a little cooler of beer, had some food. You know, it was one of those things. We had like a pay-per-view or something. So I had like a Saturday off and then Sunday pay-per-view. I mean, I just spent the whole Saturday out there at Lake Mead. Man, it was just awesome. But Lake Mead was pretty big too. I could see where I didn't get too far away from where I was because I didn't know the lake. So I kind of kept the shoreline in sight. I didn't get all Indiana Jones and adventurous or anything, but I could see real quick, big as Lake Mead is, you could get lost on that pretty quick too. That's a terrible feeling being lost too. Because one, you feel like an idiot. Two, you know, hopefully you find your way, but eventually you're going to have to ask somebody, then they'll know you're an idiot too. So that's a double-edged sword. GPS is a good idea though.
Yeah. But when you're on the water, you know, how do they know you're lost? Or if you are lost and you're sitting there trying to chase them down to flag them down and say, hey, where am I? How do I get back to shore?
Yeah.
You know, but all of a sudden, you know, it's just like I was talking to someone the other day. The first thing you don't do is start panicking because all of a sudden you realize you don't know where you're at. It's kind of like your heart starts beating a little faster. It's like, okay, there's really no impending danger, but it's just the fact that you're not in control anymore. You might not know where you're at. A little bit disconcerting.
Right. Well, the main thing to do is if you've got common sense and know north, south, east, west, you know your basic orientation before you take off from your port. you should know relatively where your port is. So worst case scenario, you can be calm, shut the engines down, chill, figure out where the sun is, where it's starting to set. Okay, that's west. I need to go east or what have you. So you can get an idea where you know where landfall is. Because the worst thing you want to do is start heading the wrong way, especially out in the Atlantic. You know, you wind up in France, you know, a couple of days later, you kind of went the wrong way.
Yeah. Dude, that's one of the things that used to kill me about traveling across Canada. You can be in Calgary or you can be in Montreal. I mean, if you ask somebody for directions, they're going to speak to you in English. All of a sudden, if you're on your way to Quebec City or whatever some of those provinces were, towns, whatever you call them, all of a sudden you walk to a gas station, you're going to buy some skull, maybe you gassed up, but you was there also to ask for directions. And that's
if you're buying skull in Canada, you screwed up and didn't bring you from home because you're getting the half a tin of skull in Canada. Remember that? They sell you half a tin?
But dude, that's the way it was. You pull over, but my whole thing is, I mean, they know what's up. They're speaking it. They can speak English, but just because you walk in there with that Texas or whatever accent, they're going to rib you.
Or South Carolina.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, it's like, come on, man. You know, no parlez-vous français here. Give me the directions. Tell me how to get to where I'm going. Or I ain't going to buy it. Chew in the back.
You know, funny thing about Canada, you know, here drive here in the U.S., you know, no matter where you're at, eventually, within 10, 12 miles, you're going to find food. You're going to find civilization. What's amazing about Canada is, as massive as Canada is and as underpopulated as a lot of it is between Vancouver and Montreal. Some of those places, there's just, you know, kilometers and kilometers of highway with nothing except maybe a Tim Hortons and a gas station if you're lucky. You know, I remember that was one of my first things I had to learn on the road driving up there in Canada. It's like, there's nowhere to get food after the show, really. Like, you know, you better get something before the show because afterwards, if you're driving to another town, you're SOL, buddy. You can have Tim Hortons, eh? That's about it.
Yeah, no, normally when you ask for a bottle of Jack Daniels at the Tim Hortons, they ain't got one.
Well, what am I supposed to do for supper? If you don't have Jack Daniels, I can't eat. What's wrong with you? That's right.
Hey, man. Man, I used to love working in Canada. It's a great place. But, you know, the problem was working in Canada was so many of the boys had so many issues at the border for various reasons.
Oh, yeah.
It was like when when we came through there, it was like, okay, red flag. We're checking every one of these MFers out. And I got to go through all your shit and, you know, just all that hassle. And it's like, man, it's one thing. But they start even in the States, when they start rifling through your stuff, they do it in plain view of everybody. And it's like, dude, I ain't got nothing. But they're going through all your shit. But, and also, I do give them credit for being stiff at the border because I do believe in that. But it just made traveling to Canada a real pain in the ass.
Well, it made it tough for me a little bit, I think, too, because, you know, traveling for me is not the most convenient thing in the world. But the part that would aggravate me is if common sense was used in any type of those security checkpoints, it would make me feel better. But when you sit there and ask for a picture and ask for an autograph and then turn around and tell me you got to rifle through my stuff, it's like, how am I a threat? Like, if you know who I am, like, you know, I get it. You've got the big badge. You've got the power. You can go through my stuff. But at the same time, like, you know what I mean? I mean, it's not like I'm asking for any differential treatment, I guess. It's just, how can I be a random check or a check? Because it's always, for me, it's always, oh, you've been randomly selected, sir. And then they'll send some guy over 5 foot tall to do me a pat down and 20 TSA agents are laughing. So I'm like, you know, you can't really work a worker, you know, random my ass. You thought it'd be funny to send the 5 foot guy over to give me a pat down. So I can't complain now. Now I get a pat down every time. I got metal in my hip now, so I get a pat down regardless. I get a free fondle every time I fly.
All right, let's take a quick pause for the calls and give big ups to TrueCar. If you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP. You might even know what it stands for, but what does it actually mean? The same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. That's enough to confuse anybody. All you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from TrueCar. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership.
True Car Dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of home. And how do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car you want. And your certified dealers know this, so they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. You're also going to need car insurance for that new vehicle. Go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes, you can be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right. Save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at GEICO.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today.
I'm not going very far.
It's too uncomfortable.
I'm in a hurry.
Sometimes I just forget.
There's no such thing as a good excuse for not buckling up. You're not only putting yourself at risk of injury or death, it could also cost you lots of money. Cops are writing tickets, so why take the risk? Do the smart thing and start buckling up every trip, day or night. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
Have you checked out the Big Podcast with Shaq lately? Man, Shaq and the team talk basketball and sports, but it's not all about sports. Hell no. Shaq talks movies, TV, music, what's happening in his life, and maybe even a little gossip. Some of his past guests include Chris Webber, The Gronk, Rob Gronkowski, and Rob Riggle. Make sure you check out the Big Podcast with Shaq every Monday, exclusively on Apple Podcasts, the Podcast One app, and PodcastOne.com. Also, remember to rate and review. We always appreciate your feedback. All right, before we get to the rest of my conversation with Paul White, let me ask you, are you hiring? Are you out there posting your position to job sites and waiting for the right people to see it? Well, ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. Hell, my producer Sean, his buddy just opened up a restaurant, and he fully staffed his restaurant in just a few weeks. And to boot, almost 80% of those candidates were in his account in just one day. That's how efficient ZipRecruiter is. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Right now, listeners of the Steve Austin Show can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's about $250 worth of services, and you can try it for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Steve. And heck, if you're out there on social media and you're using ZipRecruiter, tag me in a post and let me know. We'll give you a shout-out on the podcast. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/Steve to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Hey, dude, you had your hip replaced. How did that go?
I didn't have it replaced. I had a surgery done called a resurfacing, which I kept 98% of my bone. Man, if I showed you the pictures of what my femur bone looked like, the ball socket looked like, I mean, I had holes in it. It looked like a bowling ball. I showed it to Undertaker and, you know, he sent back, he said it looked like a jack-o'-lantern. There were just holes in it from where I'd worn the bone down so bad. Cause it hurt for, oh, you know how we are. I'd probably hurt for 3.5 years. And then I started losing range of motion. I noticed for me in the ring, you know, when a guy's working, his strides are long.
Yep.
You know, when he's hitting the ropes or he's shooting somebody in the corner. But I noticed, like, for me, my steps were just really short because I couldn't open my stride up anymore because the bone, the pelvis had grown over the bone. There was no range of motion and the joint was chewed up. There wasn't any cartilage left. So, you know, I was in constant, you know, agony, I guess. But you know how we are. I mean, stuff that put a guy in the hospital, you know, you and I have a cup of coffee and a couple of aspirin. We go to work, you know, so. When people look at it, it's like, oh, how did you even walk like that? I don't know. I had to go to work. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's just mind over matter, I guess. I mean, but now quality of life is really good. There's no stiffness. There's no range of motion. It's ridiculous. But again, it's artificial device. It's metal. It's titanium in my hip, which the movement's great. But I had a little complication after the surgery, which happens sometimes when you put metal in the body, you know, and it was that was a real trying time. It cut my return. I had about another 5 months to my return, longer than it should have been. I got a surgical infection from it because I learned more about infections than I ever wanted to know. Like, I guess our bodies are full of staph. Our noses, our skin, we're covered in it. So sometimes you have major surgeries like that, especially if you're putting metal in the body, you know, there's a lot of things that can act up and react. And so I had to go in, be opened up again. They did a real good job of really cleaning the joint the best they can, and put some vancomycin pellets in. I was on an IV drip all through Christmas for 7 weeks. I had a thing called a PICC line, which was an IV line that went into my heart, into my arm and went to my heart, because the medicine was so strong, it burned your veins out. I mean, you know, I didn't want to ask them what the hell it did to my heart if it burned my veins out. But I went through all that for about 7 weeks, which is real pain in the ass, because they say, oh, you can't work out because I got this tube hanging out of my arm that I had to hook up to 3 times a day, just like you're putting in gas. You know, I had to do this 500 milliliter bag of antibiotics. So, but I had what I called yard time, because I had to do a bag every 8 hours. And it took about 2 hours and 45 minutes to drain a bag. So I would get what I call yard time in the afternoon. I had about 4 hours where I could, you know, if I wanted to go to the store or get out of the house or go to the gym. And they told me not to work out. You know how important my fitness was, and I made so many changes. And I'm like, well, shit, they don't know. I can go work out. I'll do right-handed dumbbell curls. You know what I mean? I mean, I can do something. So like a dummy, I'm in there a couple of days after getting this PICC line put in, and I've got a 20-pound dumbbell and my right hand, and I'm thinking, well, I'll just do a couple of dumbbell reps. And I got an Apple Watch for Christmas that does your heart rate and all that stuff. Probably a damn good thing I had it. So I'm sitting doing these one-arm dumbbell curls, and all of a sudden I'm like, ooh, my heart rate's really kicking. I look down, my Apple Watch is hopping up and down on my wrist, throwing a fit, because my heart rate's up to 200 because of this. Apparently, when you increase your blood pressure, I've got a line in the vein, and that line, I guess, can vibrate or elevate your heart rate because there's an obstruction in the vein. So when they say don't work out, they mean it.
It's
don't
a shoot.
It's a shoot. Yeah, it's not one of those wrestler things where like, yeah, okay, I got you, and go do what you want anyway. No, they mean don't work out. They mean, hey, dummy, keep your blood pressure low. Don't strain yourself because it'll elevate your heart rate. So after scaring the ever-loving crap out of myself with that, I chilled out. Got the PICC line out in January. I missed the Royal Rumble. I was supposed to make my return at Royal Rumble. That didn't come to fruition. Then my contract expired. I was unemployed for a while. And just a couple of days. You know how that stuff goes with negotiation, you know what I mean? I mean, both sides are trying to get the best deal they can for themselves. I mean, I just, you know, my last match was with Braun Strowman, and I did the best I could to get him over and pass the big man torch to him if I had it, whatever to give. I had no problems making him. I think he's a great guy and a hell of a talent, and it was my pleasure to put the guy over and send him on his way. Hopefully making him better. So I was happy with that match. It was a hell of a match. If that was my last match, I mean, you know, you can't ask for anything better, you know? So I was willing to accept the fact that maybe things were done. And then, you know, I spent some time with, the big man himself. We talked, Hunter and I talked, you know, cause we were concerned about my hip. We were concerned about a lot of things, and they put together a really nice, you know, 3-year deal for me. So I'm there another 3 years. I get to do a lot more work with things that I'm passionate about, with Special Olympics and being a global ambassador with Special Olympics. And I get a chance to have a little bit more free time. Now I'm not in the trenches 5 days a week like I was for 20 years working every house show and every TV, probably being on TV too much as a giant, or I should have been an attraction. Instead, I was in there, you know, working all the time. And, you know, it's not like I was a carpenter like you, who's a good worker. I mean, I took up a lot of space. So I probably shouldn't have been on TV as much as I was. But now I'm in a little bit more limited role, and we're finding the right creative. And there's not a lot of pressure on me to have to be there every week and get people over or carry 2 or 3 segments or whatever we're doing. I can kind of show up, help the younger guys here and there, and I get to pursue outside projects that are important to me. So all in all, after going through all that hell with my hip surgery and Vince and Paul gave me a hell of a deal, Steve. You know how this business is. I mean, 20 years in this business, I didn't expect to.
Wow.
To get the respect that they gave me by giving me this deal. It's one of those kind of things that's very humbling, because both of them really appreciated the work that I give in the company and put me in a position to where, in all sincerity, I mean, they're giving this deal in January, and I haven't done a damn thing yet but a couple of appearances here and there. I haven't gotten the ring, because you know what? We think of earning our money as stepping between the ropes and earning your money.
Correct.
You know what I mean? You know, there's no pressure from Vince. There's no pressure from Hunter. They understand. I was supposed to go to Jeddah for the Greatest Royal Rumble. I was supposed to make a return there. I got cleared at WrestleMania, but there was no creative for me. I mean, they'd done that great angle of Braun Strowman and the kid for a partner, which was an amazing angle. What 10-year-old kid, what a dream to have, you know, a pro wrestler pick you out of the crowd and make you a tag champion.
That was,
you know,
awesome
what I mean?
For that kid.
And it was awesome. They did a great job for Braun because Braun doesn't need a tag partner. You know what I mean? I mean, that's one thing they're doing right with him. They're making him a monster. As long as they don't have him doing some stupid stuff, you know, if they keep that monster element to him. I mean, I know now he's a smiling baby face, which he is a good guy. You know what I mean? It's going to be tough for him to sell and get sympathy. You know, we went through that, you know, but, you know, if he can keep that monster attitude about it, he'll do very well. But that was a great opportunity for him. But I had the doctors look at it. I had some hardness around the scar. And they're like, oh, that scar tissue, you know, you can foam roll it and help break it out. So you tell me now, before I was a 500-pound, two packs a day smoker, you told me to work out. I'd agree with you, and I'd go work my ass out on the couch and get the TV remote. Now, if you tell me something that's going to improve my health, I'm probably going to do it 10 minutes after you tell me, you know? So I went, just different attitudes, because for a long time, I thought I'd never live to be past 50. I thought, oh, you don't see any old giants, I'll be dead at 50. You know, I lived like, you know, like rock and roll. I lived like James Dean, you know? Now that I'm 46, I'm like, hey, 50's not that far away. Let's shoot for 80. You know, let's eat right, take care of ourselves, exercise, and, you know, I'm still having fun in life. I may be 46. I don't feel 46. I feel 25. I'm going to start taking care of myself and live longer and do more things. But so I foam rolled it, to make a long story short, and I had some capsulized infection that was still in there that broke open. My body had just sealed it off, I guess, around the scar. So when I broke it open, my leg started swelling up. And I was like, oh, I started freaking out because I'm thinking, here we go again. And they wound up cutting it open and exercising the hardened infection. And then we did an open wound treatment, which was all superficial. Just like most any staph infection that you get, you know, it was an open wound treat. But, you know, I got a hole in my leg and I had to call Vince on a Monday and say, hey, because I was supposed to do the media the week before. I said, I can't go. I've got a 3.5 centimeter deep hole in my leg right now, and I probably shouldn't travel with it, especially out of the country and be on a plane that long. You know, I'm at a higher risk for getting a deeper infection. And Vince and Paul's credit, they, you know, because after about 4 days, it started closing up really quick. And I said, you know what, I can go if you guys want me to go. And even Paul says, why risk it, dude? You know what I mean? I mean, there's plenty of times we're going back again. You know, there's no reason to risk your health or you know, our investment in you as a talent, you know. So, again, they're very cool because, you know, there's a lot of those times they could just, they literally could just cut you loose. I think that's, for me, it's very humbling, and I'm very appreciative and very thankful for the fact that the hard work that I put in the past 20 years.
I think they're recognizing, I mean, you're a loyal guy and you're not going to phone it in. And, you know, if you're nine times out of 10, if you're hurt, you're going to work hurt.
Yeah, I'm not a phone in guy. I'm not going to call out for a tummy bug, that's for sure. So it's kind of hard, you know, in the big men circles, you look at the guys that I've had to, I don't want to say grow up with, but I grew up with in the business, so to speak. You got Undertaker, who doesn't sell anything as far as being hurt or sick. I mean, we've seen that dude with 103 fever wrestle 30 minutes and get an IV bag put in him and grill it as soon as he comes to the door. So there's no bitching up there. Kane, who's one of the toughest son of the guns around, who never complains about anything. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard Kane complain about anything other than my work.
I don't think I have either. And he's one of the smartest, most well-read guys, nicest guys in the locker room.
Oh, complete gentleman and actually insightful and brilliant. And then he goes out there and puts that mask on, and it's, you know, that's part of being the character, you know?
When you were putting those bags of antibiotics in yourself 3 times a day, every 8 hours, were you doing that on your own, or did you go in?
I was doing it on my own. No, dude, it was crazy. I had a nurse show up. First, they sent me this case of stuff to put in the refrigerator, and it took up 2 shelves in my refrigerator, and I've got a big fridge. You know, and all these implements, and you have to be careful about getting air in the line, and there's clean product, you have to have gloves on, and all this safety stuff. So, you know, I ended up setting up like my my medical ward. I had to have a little IV stand that I had to wheel around with me that had the bag hanging on it. And it was an exercise in patience because I had to watch this thing drip for 3 hours because if I moved my arm wrong, because I have a lot of muscle, if my muscles moved, they'd close the line off. So then it would stop dripping. So I had to get a pillow and hold my arm just right and sit there and watch it drip for 3 hours. I mean, it wasn't like you could just put it in for 3 hours and go do something else. I couldn't. I had to literally watch the thing drip. And at first it was overwhelming. They had a nurse that came twice a week to check the bandage under the arm because, you know, you've got a bandage under your arm with an open line that's going right to your heart. So you have to make sure that area stays infection free and you have to wrap your arm in plastic when you shower and stuff like that because you can't get water in it. And,
dude, that's a hell of an infection.
It's extremely stressful, but I guess, you know, it's what they do. For me, it's a little bit harder because if the infection was to get to the metal, because once infection gets to the metal, it's almost impossible to get the infection out because no matter how smooth or how polished metal is, it's still very porous. And I guess it's small enough for the infection to hide in. And what they'd have to do is they'd have to put a cement spacer in the joint for 3 months. And then 3 months later, they would go in and cut the metal off because they put a bonding putty that fuses to the bone. So they can't just like unscrew it. And you know what I mean? Like you take a cap off a wine bottle and screw in your cap on. You can't. You got to cut all that off and do a full hip replacement. Which if they do full hip replacement, there's no way I could be in the ring again and do anything. That's why the avoid an infection thing has been very stressful and of the highest importance because, you know, I'm not done in the ring yet. I mean, hell, I'm 380 pounds. I feel like now, especially that my hip has more range of motion. I move faster than I moved in, you know, 17, 18 years. I wrestled with Fit Finley a little bit up in, at WrestleMania and got in the ring and rolled around with Fit a little bit to clear with the doctor and Fit was laughing because he's like, you're fast again, you know, which made me feel good because my mobility is back where I had lost so much mobility before. Fit would laugh at me. He said, yeah, for a while you kind of lean to the left and go that way or you lean to the right and go that way because I didn't have the ability to plant my foot and turn because, you know, there was no joint space. So,
dude, I got a question for you. With all that healing up and all the patients, and dude, I'd be worried about the air bubble going into my veins. But my question is, I've always had a real cool relationship with Bess. Every time we see each other, it's always great to see her. We start shooting a breeze and laughing and joking. How in the hell did Bess put up with your big cantankerous ass while you was going through all that healing up?
She did great. I mean, obviously it was very stressful, but if you know her, she's not going to sell it. So, I mean, that's just not who she is. Yeah. She's not going to sell it. You know what I mean? But, you know, she wrote down the list, the medications. I mean, it was a little overbearing because, you know, it was like reporting for a friggin', you know, muffler inspection every day. It seemed like, you know what I mean? Like, we had to do this. We laid out all the instruments. Everything was done according to how the nurse that came explained it, followed the rules, checked stuff off. So it was a little OCD on some parts, but, you know, I think she did a great job with everything because it's pretty stressful because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if the device is going to go bad or if the infection is going to go bad or other complications arise. And then you don't know. But, you know, all you can do is, you know, have faith in doing the right thing and you know, go forward with it. You know what I mean? I mean, you can't sit there and feel sorry for yourself and give up. I mean, shit, man. I think all of it, as difficult as it was, none of it that I went through made me any worse off. If anything, it made me a little bit more appreciative of things that I've done, things that I've accomplished, and things that I want to accomplish.
How do you feel at 380 pounds? I mean, you've got to feel great. I mean, because what were you pre-surgery or at your heaviest when, you know, there for a time, you're looking rough. You kind of went downhill, and then now you're 380 and jacked, and you have abs. So how, that 380's got to be a lot less wear and tear and easier to carry around.
Well, it is. I think a lot of it when I was, you know, 500, I think my heaviest, I was 537. When I did the match with Aki Bono, I think Aki Bono weighed 488 and I weighed 509. because I remember Vince getting pissed at me because Aki Bono was supposed to weigh more than me. And then he just looks at me and goes, 509 pounds. He just shook his head and walked off. Like, I said, I don't know. I'm a quarter ton of fun. What do you want me to say? So, but, you know, and for our business too, and not that this is an excuse, but I think a lot of it was psychological that we had a lot of big guys, Bradshaw, Kane, Taker, Billy Gunn. I mean, there were a lot of big dudes walking around all the time. And if I didn't weigh five bills, I wouldn't have been the big show. You know, yes, was it harder on my joints, but I was younger. I could carry it. Now at 46, I don't weigh part of it. You know, I like having the mobility that I have now. I like having, you know, the only effed up part is it's hard for all, like a lot of custom clothes that I had made that I really enjoyed. I can't wear anymore. I had some suits that I really liked and I took them off. So, oh, well, I'll get them taken in. I dropped 12 inches off my waist. So the tailor said, there's nothing I can do with them. You can lose a back pocket. I was like, well, okay. So those are gone. You know what I mean? I mean, it's ridiculous how much things have changed. So, but it, for the health wise, it's better. And I want to start doing more things in Hollywood, you know, do some more movies and really start to expand that. And you know, as well as I do, you look big on camera anyway. And at 500 pounds, it'd probably be too big for me to get a lot of roles. It's going to be tough now because I'm going to be typecast in whatever I do because I'm so big. And you know, a lot of those actors out there are smaller. You know,
oh,
I mean?
My.
So,
well, you'd be amazed at how small everybody is because there's no one big standing next to them. All of a sudden, you get a guy who's just 6'2". They look gigantic on screen compared to everybody else because, you know, most of the women over there, I mean, they're television actresses or movie actresses. I mean, they could be, you know, 5 feet to 5'4", would probably be on the average. And of course, you have your taller ones, but even the dudes, you know, 5'6" to 5'8", but you don't really have a scope until you have this big-ass dude standing next to them. They're like, oh, so-and-so is not as tall as I thought they were.
Yeah, and it changed. And I can't blame, you know, these guys that are, you know, running their territory, so to speak, that are big-time actors, that are, you know, action heroes and stuff. But, I mean, look at Rock. I mean, Rock's lost a lot of weight to fit in and trim down and lean down. You know what I mean? He still looks massive compared to everyone else, you know. So, you know, so
oh,
it's
dude, I mean,
he's
pretty jacked up right now. Well, and going back to the height difference thing, there was a picture, I guess, from their last movie, Fate of the Eight, or whatever it was a Fast and Furious franchise, and there was a picture. Yeah. I guess it was him and Vin Diesel in a scene, and man, they're eye to eye, or just maybe Rock's a shade taller, but Rock is a legit 6'4", 6'5", and Vin Diesel is not near that tall, so I know they had that guy on an apple box on that scene. No, I'm serious.
Aww.
Because, dude, I mean,
yeah,
you know, Rock is a big-ass dude.
Yeah, and you don't want to kill Vin Diesel's gimmick by showing, you know, that he's not, you know, of the stature that somebody like Rock, like Dwayne is, you know what I mean? So it's tough. You know who Peter Dinklage is? You know, the actor from Game of Thrones? He's a little guy, a little fella. All right. Well, he is such a great actor that he's able to get parts now that he's earned through his ability that aren't written for little people anymore. You know what I mean? Because they overlook that. Even though he's a small person, he's getting different parts because people are looking at his ability. You know, and I think for me, believe it or not, as odd as it sounds, even though we're on opposite ends of the spectrum, for me, when I look at somebody like Peter Dinklage as being such a great actor for his size, with the personality and things that he's able to convey, I mean, you know, I've got a personality and range and stuff like that. That's one of those kind of things I'd like to try to do as well, where it's not just, oh, look at this massive individual, which is always going to be there. But hopefully I can earn the kind of roles and put out the kind of material that people will overlook the fact that, oh, I wasn't bad. I actually got into that character. I didn't get into the fact that Big Show's half the size of a building. So, but I mean, you know, that's those, like when you're a kid and you're saying, oh, I want to wrestle as good as Harley Race or as good as Ric Flair. You know what I mean? You know, whether it ever happens, who knows, but you have something to look forward to and work towards, you know?
So you really,
I don't want to just be your average big guy.
You want to go out acting stuff. What about that? Because, man, me, not so much. I got into reality television. That's where I kind of find my stride. I enjoy being myself.
Right.
And I just hate the memorization process. So what is it about, you know, the acting that really appeals to you?
It appeals to me is the ability to be a different character. I mean, I've been the Big Show so long, and I've done I've done 38 or 39 heel face turns over my career. I've done comedy. So, I mean, Vince has tried everything he can to play with my range and showcase it. But for me, I enjoy the new challenges. I think that's one of the things that attracts me the most about working with movies and television is playing a character, playing a role, delivering the dialogue, working with the other actors. You spend 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks doing that project, and then I roll into another project. So it's a new challenge, new actors, new director, new character, and start all over again. I think for us, it's like when I first started wrestling, it was the same thing. There were new opponents to wrestle. There were new buildings I'd never been in. There were new cities I'd never been in. I was a small town kid from South Carolina. So that magic for me was something new to look forward to. And I think that's right now where I'm at mentally, is looking for that next thing that gives me that same kind of excitement. Now, sure, there's not the instant gratification that we get as a performer like we do in front of a live crowd. I mean, you know, we feel that audience, we know how to make them, you know, that's an instant gratification. You walk through that curtain, you know if you've done well or you know if you screwed the pooch. You know what I mean? With the acting and the discipline, the art of that, you're trusting the director, you're trusting yourself, you're trusting your fellow actors, you know, and then you have to go one step further and trust the guy editing the scene, because he picks your best take, he picks your best angle, and then you have to sit there and see what's done at the end. It's an incredible rush of an experience, you know, that I kind of dig. I mean, you know, let's face it, I don't have any real job qualifications. I could probably work at Jiffy Lube and change oil or pass out shopping carts at Walmart. But you know what I mean? But, you know, this whole pretend thing I'm pretty good at. So I think I'll stick with that for a while. If I can. I mean, you know, who knows? I mean, I think ideally I'd like to find the ability where I can get regular work and do a couple of projects a year. And now, listen, I'm not going to be, you know, a Dwayne Johnson and be a leading role man, or Matthew McConaughey or Mark Wahlberg. That's not my gig. I get it. But I'm a pretty good villain. I'm a pretty good sidekick. You know what I mean? I'm a character element to enhance something. And all those scripts, and every time you see a movie, that's people that have put together money and put an investment together like a business. And they're investing in you to pull that role off. And that's the one part I understand. I don't worry about the rejection. I don't worry about parts that I've missed or I've read for and I haven't got, because I understand it's a business. If you don't think I'm the right investment for that business project, then that's fine. We'll move. I'll keep moving on. And I'll find something that'll work. I'll find something that'll showcase the talent and just gotta stay positive with it and stay after it, you know? So, I mean, you know, who knows? I mean, I might be 20 years from now and still haven't done shit, but, you know, I kind of believe that once I get in the right crowds and work with the right people and do the right projects, they'll see, oh, the big guy's not half bad. He's fun to be around. Let's work with him more. And you know how that works. You know, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Yeah, you get on a couple gigs out there, you get in the right click, get around the right people, and then, you know, hey, man, this is a good dude. I mean, it's kind of like Sandler's crew. He kind of puts together that crew.
Right.
He rotates all those guys in and out. He'll bring a couple of guys and he'll keep them out a few times and he'll work them back in. And he's smart about it. But, you know, those are guys. And, you know.
I keep prank emailing Adam Sandler to do Captain Sano 2, you know, or just Captain Sano 1. I keep prank emailing him. I think the part where he told me to F off and don't email him again was probably the sign that I shouldn't keep bothering the guy, maybe. No, I'm kidding.
Hey, man, what do you think you'd be doing right now if you would have never gotten into the business of pro wrestling? And you would have never went out to Hollywood. Dude, being a guy, a legit giant, what would you have done with
your life? I know exactly what I'd probably done. I probably would have finished up some kind of education, one or two things. If I'd had the opportunity to go to college on an athletic scholarship like I did, I probably would have finished up and gotten a teaching degree and I'd have taught high school history and been a high school basketball coach. Because that's something that I know would have given me fulfillment and enjoyment. I love history. I love talking about history. And I love taking a guy, a young man or young woman, depending if I'm coaching male or female, from the time in the ninth grade to 12th grade, young men, young women, and transform into young adults with, you know, class and character, respect, and good work ethic. And that's, you know, things that were instilled in me by the great coaches that I experienced. That's something I'd love to pass on. That's still something I might do down the road, too. I get a little bit older. I might find a school that needs a basketball coach and donate my time. And if not that, my dad told me all the time I should go to tech school and be a welder, because you never see a welder that's not working. So that was his philosophy. He told me I was wasting time playing basketball. I should go to tech school and be a welder. That way I'd always be able to put food on the table. On one aspect, he's right. But, you know, sitting under that hot welding hood in a 100-degree garage is probably not my idea of a fun way to make a living. But, you know, you got to do what you got to do. And my hat's off in respect to those that do it.
Hey, man, with signing your new 3-year deal, getting rid of all the infection, when do you expect to be back in ring or back on television with WWE?
Hopefully soon. I mean, I know this month I've got a lot of commitments with Special Olympics. I'm getting ready for the USA Games in July 1st in Seattle. I'm looking forward to that. I'm visiting with a lot of different athletes in different states now. I spent some time last week in Chicago with a young lady named Katie, who's a powerlifter, who's deadlifting 215. She set her own personal best, but she lives in a community in Chicago. You know, they changed the term. It says special needs. They came out with a term now that's pretty positive. It's called people of determination. So it's more of an empowering title. I mean, you know, today's society, everybody's important on titles. And I agree in a lot of ways that people should recognize how amazing these young men and women are. But she lives in a community that the entire community are people of determination. She lives in a house with two other roommates. They're also athletes. She has two part-time jobs. Pays her own rent, does her bills, the whole deal. But in the center of the community is a community center with a gym and a pool and like a place where they all watch movies and they have like little dance club parties and stuff like that. So it's a community group, but they're all independently living. And to me, it's just what an amazing little athlete. I got her to say on camera that I was better than The Rock and John Cena. So I have actual footage of somebody saying that on camera. So I'm pretty positive about that. whether or not I bribed her and coaxed her into it, that's not the point. The point is I got it on film. Whether or not WWE will ever let it see the light of day, that's yet to be known. But I get to spend time with these athletes on their journey, how they get ready for the USA Games, and it's pretty inspiring. I mean, you know, I got a 20-year-old daughter. I'd love for her to be able to pay her own rent and pay her own bills. That would be pretty impressive. But the fact that these kids now are getting out and doing their own thing in these communities and living a fulfilled quality life where, you know, before Mrs. Kennedy got involved and set up Special Olympics, there wasn't a lot of support for these individuals, you know. It's the thing about Special Olympics, too. When you go there and you see the volunteers and the sponsors and how, you know, there's medical people there to make sure that these kids are, you know, their teeth are clean and they're getting good medical care and they're healthy. And then the spirit of competition is amazing because they'll run track. If one of them falls, they'll all go and help pick up the one that fell. You know, when you look at it, it's like, wow, that's human beings. That's really nice how we should act. We should encourage each other. We should hug it free, you know, freely all the time. But, you know, the only problem is sometimes, you know, we don't live that way as human beings. And I think for me, I tell people all the time, why do you work with Special Olympics so much? I work with them because they make me happy. They're like chicken soup for my soul. When I work with those kids, they make me feel good. I love the innocence. I love the drive. I love the passion that they have for whatever they're doing. You could be in the middle of talking in a business meeting. If somebody breaks out music, they're going to dance right there. The hell with it. Dance time. And I love that freedom of just joy and happiness that they hunt for. You know, we let bills build up, you know, taxes, mortgages, BS, all that stuff builds up and weighs us down. And you look at the purity of life, every day is a gift. Every day is a blessing. You know, tell the ones you love them, hug people as much as you can. You know what I mean? Be thankful for the things you have. You know, I'm not on a soapbox preaching, but I'm just saying you can learn a lot from seeing how these kids interact with each other. It gives you some own insight for your own life and what you're doing wrong.
Dude, I've known you forever, and when did you really become heavily involved with the Special Olympics? Because, I mean, you and me don't talk every day, but, and you were...
No, I know, because I FaceTimed the other day, and you told me that dudes don't FaceTime. So,
now, before you answer that question, here's a story. Me and my wife were driving down to Best Buy to get a gimmick speaker for my gym over here in Nevada. And tennis shoes. So all of a sudden, I'm driving down the road, my phone starts ringing, and, you know, got a hands-free device, the whole 9 yards, because you're not supposed to have a iPhone in your hand in California, so I abide by the laws. And all of a sudden, I just look at the screen to see who's calling, FaceTime, Big Show, or Paul White. And I'm thinking, God dang, surely he butt-dialed me, because the only person, the only other person I ever FaceTime is my wife. So I'm like, well... The thing is still ringing, so maybe he needs to talk to me for a shoot. And so anyway, I went ahead and answered it, and then I had my earbuds in and everything. I said, hey, man, what's up, as I'm driving through El Segundo traffic. And we had this conversation, and the only reason you were calling me, go ahead to tell me.
I'm telling you, I just heard the new Judas Priest album, Firepower, and you're the only person that I know personally that appreciates great guitar licks and great drum riffs and you know, music that makes you want to get up and do something. And I just had to call you because I was like, man, look, if I'm going to come across a good truck, a good gun, good heavy metal music, I'm going to call you and let you know, because I don't bother you. Hey, I know what the road's like. A lot of times when we're home, we don't want to hear from anybody. But once in a while, I get some good information. I want to share it. I was like, dude, this Judas Priest album's on fire. You got to call it. And you're just like driving. You're doing a good job of not looking at me other than when you saw my face on the screen. And then you kept your eyes on the road. But you said, dudes don't FaceTime dudes. And I was like, see, I didn't know that. I just learned a lesson in cool. See, that's why I always call you, because I always learn something more manly by talking to you. So now I know that dudes don't FaceTime dudes. I can use that line on everybody else. Oh, man, dudes don't FaceTime dudes. Stone Cold said so.
Oh, man, it's kind of a weird factor. As good of friends as you and me are, it's like, I don't want to see my face.
At least I have my shirt on. I didn't make it weird. I could have called you from the gym or something, taking my shirt off and be like, hey, Steve, what you doing, bud? You know, I've probably got dial tones, but, you know.
Podcast One Sports would like to congratulate Dan Patrick for his hard-earned Emmy nomination at this year's Sports Emmy Awards. With A-list guests from the world of sports, Dan Patrick brings you the inside scoop with a dose of humor.
People are going to bet on that game because they have to have a reason to watch that game.
Congratulations, Dan, and thank you for another year of the finest sports casting around.
This guy's got it.
Check out the Dan Patrick Show every weekday on Podcast One Sports and Apple Podcasts, and remember to rate and review.
All right, everybody, give me the go-home cue, so I'm going to wrap up this podcast and ride off in the sunset. Before I do that, I want to thank Paul White, the Big Show, for joining me on my podcast. And ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin has all the shirts that I wore on previous seasons of Broken Skull Challenge and all the shirts that I'm wearing now. Check them out. Best damn IPA on the planet is Broken Skull IPA, my IPA. Brewed by El Segundo Brewing Company. You can find it at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in Cali. If you ain't in Cali, check inside the cellar.com and see if they ship to your state. And while I've been at the Broken Skull Ranch 2.0, I've been using the hell out of both of my pocket knives. The Cold Steel Broken Skull Knife and the new Cold Steel Working Man's Knife. And you can find both of them at my new Amazon store. Amazon has the best price on both knives. Just go to amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin. I got to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. And you can find all my sponsors at podcastone.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page, then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. Folks, I am on social media. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Steve Austin BSR. And until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.